Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Dan Foster of National Review Online in for the vacationing Jim Garrity today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, you know, it's been largely the liberal pundits who have been kind of licking their chops at how the Republican Party in an upcoming election cycle where there's a very good opportunity to make some gains in both the House and the Senate as well as the White House, that it's going to be the Tea Party and the establishment Republicans that tear each other apart. There won't be enough unity and the opportunity will go by the wayside. Well, on to the Democratic side of the aisle now, because the president is getting a lot of criticism, but some of it's coming from a very unlikely place, and that's the black community. You've got the Congressional Black Caucus and California Congresswoman Maxine Waters in particular. This was her comment at a recent town hall meeting out in her district in Los Angeles.
We want to give them every opportunity, but our people are hurting.
Yes,
the unemployment is unconscionable.
Yes,
we don't know what the strategy is. We don't know why on this trip that he's in the United States now, he's not in any black communities. We don't know that.
Elsewhere in her comments, she says that it's time to unleash the Congressional Black Caucus. They could really help, she claims. The president, of course, doesn't seem to think so, or at least hasn't thought so yet. So it's interesting to watch infighting, not because it's necessarily going to swing a lot of the black vote to the Republican, but we did see in the recent Gallup poll the president's at his lowest approval number, even among blacks, which is still about 80%. And while he'll still get huge numbers from them next year, the enthusiasm gap between next year and 2008 could be huge in some places.
That's the big issue here. Is, I mean, the president in many ways won in 2008 by turning out people who had never voted before, first-time voters, people who aren't usually politically engaged. If those people stay home, and a lot of them come from the black community, then he's in a lot of trouble, especially in the South. But there's another thing going on here, which is that, you know, this idea that the president might be a black president, but he's not the right kind of black president, which is something you see in the black community and in the progressive community, liberal community as well. I got into a tiff last week with Ezra Klein about him insisting that this debt super committee needed to have more women and minorities on it, which I just thought was completely idiotic, and expressed as much to him in polite terms. But when I suggested that if he really wanted more diversity on the super committee, how would he feel about Michelle Bachmann and Alan West? He, of course, demurred. So, again, diversity is important, but it's the right kind of diversity for the liberal. And the same goes with his president. We heard about how transformative it was to have a black president, but he's maybe not the right kind of black president, is what we're hearing in whispers and increasingly shouts from some in the black community like Maxine Waters.
And while there are some members of the Congressional Black Caucus that make a tremendous amount of sense on given issues, some of the ones that might be unleashed, including Maxine Waters, who let it slip that she wants a socialist country a couple of years ago, to have her out there, Jim Clyburn out there, some of the things he said over time definitely could be very hurtful to the president's reelection campaign. So he's got himself into a little bit of a quandary, and we'll see what kind of impact that has. But very, very interesting that he's already getting a lot of guff from what you would think is one of the most loyal factions of his base. So
yeah,
on to martini number two now, and the bad news. And it's certainly not a unique story to Israel, but once again, terrorism has reared its head. This time it's in a resort town right at the very southern tip of Israel where it meets the Red Sea, where it kind of borders Egypt and Jordan. And it's just a lovely area, but basically a triple terrorist strike, 7 dead. And some of the reports, Dan, are saying that some of these mortars were actually fired from inside Egypt. And this is not near the Egypt border with Gaza. This is over to the east. It's hard to say what the connection is or what the impact is of a new government being in place in Egypt or the lack of a government being in place in Egypt. But for those who enjoyed the 30-plus years of stability with Egypt after the Camp David Accords, the downfall of Mubarak might seem something that could be regretted in some ways as this increasing hostility continues.
We knew that it was a mixed bag with Mubarak, and I very much respected the president's decision to take it slowly and think through his words and the official U.S. government posture on Mubarak at the time. And I think realism is tough. If you want to run a realistic foreign policy, you need to understand that you're not always going to be able to associate yourself with the cause of freedom and the advancing of that agenda. I mean, we want a long-term strategy that advances those ends, but sometimes you have to make common cause with people who might not be ideal. And so without coming down on one side or another, because it's way above my pay grade, I think we expected that this could be one consequence of an Egypt without Mubarak. And it's also interesting to note that this happened just a day after press reports yesterday that there were secret peace talks between Mahmoud Abbas and Shimon Peres in London a couple of months ago that have just now been revealed. So I don't know if there's any connection there, but again, this is an old story in Israel, that there's a faction of the Palestinian people and a faction of their political class that seems genuinely interested in peace, and a much louder faction and much more violent faction that does everything it can to make sure that that never happens.
To point out that this also comes in the wake of probably the frostiest relations between the United States and Israel than we've seen in a very long time. So all of that coming together, unfortunately, seven at least dead in those attacks. On to Martini number three now, which is always the crazy one, and back to racial politics in a different way. And Dan, usually it's pretty far along in the presidential campaign or any general election campaign when the liberals start throwing out the race card. It used to be really in the last few days of the campaign when they didn't think they were going to win. Now, Rick Perry apparently is a racist, according to Chris Matthews, who went so far as to say this.
By the way, Eisenhower was the one who brought federal troops into Little Rock.
I'm not sure.
Do you think Rick Perry would be for that?
Do you think he'd be cheering for Ike today as he brought the troops in to desegregate the schools in Little Rock?
I don't think so.
And during that same broadcast, Matthew says, I may have gone too far the other day when I called him Bull Connor with a smile, but I don't know that I'm ready to apologize for that yet. So apparently this is due to Perry not necessarily embracing the way that some of the legislation came about in the 1960s. But for Matthews to go and make those sorts of blanket statements without understanding why Rick Perry would have perhaps done things a little bit differently is ridiculous to the nth degree.
The worst part about this sanctimoniousness about integration, we hear it so often from the left, is that you're helping yourself not just to 2020 hindsight, but to the easiest moral. I mean, it's such an easy moral question to us in 2011, whether or not the school should have been integrated. There's only one right answer to that question, but it's such an annoying intellectual or quasi intellectual tick to set up these hypothetical scenarios and to try and bait conservatives and libertarians with questions like this. I mean, I'm actually in many ways not a Senator Rand Paul fan, but when they hit him on this during the campaign on integration, I came to his defense because obviously we all know the right answer to the question of integration in 2011. But what Rand Paul had the temerity to suggest was that I'm going to stick to my philosophical principles and take your hypothetical seriously. You've asked me a hypothetical question, and I'm going to tell you honestly, knowing now what we do, what my principles would say about that. And that might just be a little too difficult or a little too subtle for progressives to understand. I've never heard anybody defend segregation, and I certainly never heard Rick Perry defend it, which makes this completely irrelevant. But it's a tick that you see again and again from the left, and it's dishonest.
And of course, if we're getting it now, it means two things. Number one, we're going to get a whole lot more of it. And number two, it means Rick Perry has really scared the pants off a lot of liberals now. And we'll see if he's the one that continues to draw their fire day after day and week after week. But in the early going, they definitely feel a threat here, perhaps as they haven't felt from anyone else yet in this campaign. But he's got their attention. Dan, fun as always. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online, and for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.